Welcome to Da Vinci's Discourse, where the minds of today's most innovative entrepreneurs are unveiled and explored. And my name is Kyle Campbell, your guide on this journey into the depths of the entrepreneurial psyche. So sit back, relax, and get ready to dive into the minds of the greats. This is Da Vinci's Discourse.
So Dana, awesome to have you here. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? If somebody were to ask you who you are, what would you tell them?
Oh God. First off, I love this question because I am in the middle of rewriting the Boss Mom book, which I wrote in 2015 and is now eight or so years old. And one of the things we talk about is that this natural inclination of a mom is to say, ask that question. It's like, oh, well, I'm a mom. And that's the first answer. Honestly, if I were taking the parenting out, which I think is actually a smart thing for people to do when they think about who they are and what they want to tell people about them, sure. I'm a builder. I love building things. I love creating things. I have a weird need to be unique and figure things out. I'm not good at, like, it's funny. I cook and I sew and I love Legos and all those things. And I love taking a pattern and I love then replicating that pattern and saying like, oh, I made that exactly the way it was supposed to. And I like that. But in business, I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it that way. I'm going to build it a new way. So yeah, I mean, that's Boss Mom was born from doing things a different way. Our Nurture to Convert system, which is our unique marketing system, is built that way. So yeah, if you asked, who am I? I'm a builder.
I love that. Building.
And my dad was an auto body shop. We loved MacGyver. Like my brother and I made each other duct tape presents for Christmas for many, many years. So
did you make the Wallace, the classic duct tape Wallace?
Oh, one time I made a backpack for his son that was like a full on backpack with a pattern on it with like the leash so that your kid can't run away. it was like lined in fabric. I mean, I went all out.
Wow, no kidding. All right. Well, yes. If I ever need something made, I'll hook you up. So let's say, like, I wonder, what are you building right now then? What's your current build that you're passionate about as we speak?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because when you talk about building, there's building physically and then there's building mentally, right? Yeah. And so I've done a lot of the physical building. We built a lot over the last, 4 or 5 years. A lot of what we call a micro coaching methodology. So trying to really shift what group coaching and coaching looks like away from weekly calls, getting on and having one question to actually getting micro coaching answers that get you real progress. Because in the online space, marketing is 80% of what you do. And marketing is testing. Like, it's literally what it is. It's testing and tweaking. It's finding out nobody cared and then figuring out what they care about and then figuring out why they cared yesterday, but not today, and all of those things. So it's you got to have that iterative progress. So we've spent a lot of time over the last 4 or 5 years building out our nurture convert systems that do that. In rewriting the Boss Mom book, I've shifted over the last 6 months, really interestingly, to more of the mental building, which is why are there so many, and in my case, I mean, this is a lot of people. In my case, I just happen to target moms who have businesses because there's a special kind of additional priority system that goes there. Why is it so hard for some of them to feel successful, be successful, do those things? Where is the gap? And so figuring out what is that gap, and it turns out it's very mental. It's a very mental gap of how we perceive about who we should follow, who we should listen to, how we should listen to them, how we should see ourselves, how we should actually participate in our kids and our partners' lives. A lot of things that I've been building is this, we've been calling it like a guilt detox, of we often have this way of needing, and I think women do this in general, needing to make sure everybody's okay. We have a natural instinct to take care of everybody. But I'm in the book, I'm arguing that that's actually unhealthy and unhelpful for your partner and your kids, because one of the biggest things that helps us become good contributing human beings is to have to step up, is to have to contribute, right? Contributing makes you feel worthy, makes you feel connected. Like, I built my business on helping people build communities and understanding how community and culture works. And if you try to just be the person that rules everything, Those are the groups, those are the communities that get shut down. Everybody gets burnt out. Everybody just moves on to the next thing. It's a dictatorship.
Dictatorship, right? Is exactly the word.
That doesn't work. Yeah, it does not work. When you allow people to rise up, when you allow people to show you their capabilities, when you allow people to help because you need them, when they feel needed, when they feel valued, valuable, and seen are the three requirements of humanness. When they feel that way, then all of a sudden, they start to really show you amazing things about their abilities, and it lessens your burden. And so we have this space where these moms are not lessening their burden. They're increasing their burden by starting businesses. And then you have partners and kids that are not being able to give up the opportunity to step up. And so, yeah, this idea of how do we do that? And how do we do that with our communities? How do we do that with our teams? How do we do that? So that you don't, like, I'm kind of on a idea of like solopreneurship should not be a thing. There's nothing you should ever do in life alone. There's like everything should be shared. We should share burdens. We should share joys. We should share workload. We should share all of those things. Yeah. And when we do that, that's where the magic happens. So yeah, there's been a lot of building in what are the systems that you could have to mentally create that resilience for yourself to let go, the resilience to allow people to step up. And what does that look like? So that we could have maybe less divorces. Maybe we have it. Like I have a daughter who's 8, and people tell me, they're like, oh, she's 8. Wait till she's 14. She's going to be a handful. And I'm like, don't put that on my daughter. Like, I'm going to have a daughter that's awesome when she's 15. Like, let's not pretend all teenagers suck. I feel
right.
like
let's there's not a project couple your that experience are, onto me, please.
Yes. Well, and just they may not even have kids. They may not even have daughters. It's just what culturally we have been told through movies, through everything, is like girl teenagers are hard. Like having babies is impossible. Like the woman does all the work. And like, we know that's like not true in so many areas. But we as men and women put burdens on ourselves. And the funny part is that I am not a psychiatrist. I am not a life coach. I am a marketing and messaging coach. And it is so much, it's so funny how much therapy I do with clients in order, because ultimately what we're asking people is to get online and be seen, be heard, be recognized, be, accomplished, be featured, be listened to. Be a mentor. We're asking them to do all these things that are forward facing, and that requires them to see themselves and say, how worthy am I of being seen? How worthy am I of being heard? How unique are the things I want to say? Am I better than that other person who does it better than me and has been doing it longer? Right? Like, why someone ghosted me, someone said something mean to me online, right? It's like all of those things are asking us to see ourselves and then boldly put ourselves out there anyway. And like, that's a huge ask. So I think this entrepreneur online revolution that we have had over the last 20 years has actually the reason why we've also had a mental health life coaching spurt as well, because you have all these people going out and trying things online and then realizing like, oh, I'm a hot mess. I should talk to somebody.
Oh, I'm a hot mess. I should start a podcast. A lot of people will do that. Instead of going to therapy, they'll start a podcast. And, right? Because you got to have that human to human connection. It's an interesting feature, you know? When it comes down to that gap in the mind that you're talking about, what comes to my mind is Dan Sullivan's gap in the gain methodology. So what he talks about is you can have a comparison to what your future goal is, how you see yourself, where you want to be, which you'll always have some sort of a dissonance between where you are and where you want to be. There's that gap that you're talking about, and your goal is to bridge that gap, but it's difficult when you're comparing yourself to your future self. He talks about comparing yourself to who you were last week and last month, using the progress as the measuring stick. So that way, once you get to that, it helps facilitate the growth to where you want to be. Instead of having to say, I'm here, this is where I want to be, therefore I'm failing because I'm not there yet. So he says to flip that around, look at the successes to how you've gotten to where you are, and use those to validate the fact that you can get there because of how you've come, right? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I love it. We talk about a lot of our community, we say the stages of norm. So you're shifting your stages of normalcy. So for instance, if you're like, I make 8K a month in my business, you know, and I want to get to 20K a month, but that seems like that gap is really, really huge, right? What you do is to create from a psychological standpoint, your brain is trying to protect you from things that could be dangerous. It tries to keep you safe, and yeah, safe is what it knows, right? So it knows 8K a month. It gets it and understands. Even if that's not enough to pay your mortgage and do the things you want, even if it's not enough, yeah, it's used to dealing with whatever situation you're in. And so one of the things we do to get out of this stage of normalcy and move into the next one, so that gap that you're talking about, we talk about anchors, right? So instead of looking at, because a lot of times, like I used to do coaching or help coaches for a patient advocacy company that were health coaches. And one of the things that when they would get on and talk to people, there were employees at companies that would hire us, we would always say that losing weight is an outcome, not a goal, right? Their goal cannot be to lose 20 pounds. That is not a goal. That is an outcome. You cannot control that. You can control how much fruit you eat. You can control whether you did the sit-ups that day. You can control whether you cut things out of your diet. You can control, you know, getting good sleep. You can control meditation and rest. You can control all of those things. You cannot control the weight that you lose. That is an outcome. Money is also an outcome. So when we have an anchor, and for instance, if you say, okay, well, I'm going to get up in the morning, I'm going to do a one minute plank, right? And that, or I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to journal for 10 minutes, or I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to do this one thing, right? I'm going to get up in the morning, I'm going to take a shower. And like I joke, I take a shower and I shave my legs. And people are like, that's such a weird thing to have as an anchor. I was like, yeah, but if I shave my legs, I'm more likely to do my hair, put on makeup, wear nice clothes. And then I'm automatically more productive that day because I work at home. You know what? It's easy. Wearing my pajamas and not showering.
No shit.
Way easier.
But I can't do it because if I have pajama pants on, for example, then you're not in the same state as though, let's say, you didn't shave your legs, you didn't put the makeup into your hair. It's like,
but instead of me focusing, instead of me focusing on making 20,000 a year is the first thing, or 20,000 a month on the first thing.
Yeah.
I focus on the one anchor. I focus on the one minute thing, that one tiny little spark that sparks all of the other routines, all of the other actions, that puts me in the mode of being the kind of person that thinks. So for instance, I would sit down and I would go, okay, my anchor is three questions. I have to ask myself, is there anything that if I don't do it today, someone else can't do their job? Because that has a ripple effect of then if they don't do their job, then I feel behind. Then I start to feel like I have to do things. And then I feel like, should I fire them because they're not doing their job? But really it's me not giving them the things to do their job. There's a whole list of things that then keep your energy away from building the thing you want. So I'd ask myself, is there anything I need to do so someone else can do their job? Right? Is there one thing I can do today that will get me visible, that will create traffic, visibility, authority, and clout? Right? Is there one thing I can do today that gets me closer to revenue? Right? Is there one? So, and I would ask myself those three questions. And that was the only anchor. I've had it where my anchor was just like when we moved from Trello over to ClickUp, and we created this whole daily focus board system. I was like, yeah. And then I would not use it all the time. And so my only reminder on my phone was to look at the app. That was it. That was the only thing I had to do. And now from there, if I look at the app, I'm way more likely to do those things, right? If I say the only thing I have to do is I have to log into Stripe and I have to look at how much money I made today, I'm way more likely to take actions towards revenue if I'm seeing what my money is, either going, holy crap, I need more of it, or, oh yeah, I'm doing awesome. What did I do to get there? Whatever that is, it's like the anchor is the one tiny 1 minute thing. And if you can get in the habit of that one anchor, that is a ripple effect of everything else. And you will start to become the person who takes actions to make 20 grand. Those are the goals to make, you know, to do these actions so that the outcome can be the 20 grand. And then all of a sudden, once you're there, you're going, oh, I'm making 20 grand. You're like, I'd like to make 40 grand. Okay. What's that one anchor that the kind of person that makes 40 grand a month is? What do they do? Right. And so that's often why when you see people in entrepreneurship, they go, wow, well, now I'm in meditation. Now I'm in breath work. Now all of a sudden I've cut out alcohol. Now all of a sudden I've, you know, I do all these things that are healthy. I do these cleanses. I do detoxes. I do all that stuff. Because when you think about the one anchor, it goes, okay, I'm going to do that one anchor. And my person doesn't have to go off and drink in order to, you know, in order to feel great about their life. I'm creating a great life. Okay. So if I do that, then what do I have to do is that one little anchor to then ripple effect all of the things that I want. If you do one anchor, those gaps start to get filled. And now all of a sudden you're just moving to the next level of normalcy. And instead of it feeling like it's this huge thing you have to do, you're more focused on the one tiny thing that causes you to become the kind of person that gets those bigger goals.
Right. I love that so much, right? I mean, BJ Fogg wrote a book called Tiny Habits, and it talks exactly about what you're talking about. So, for example, if somebody were to just get on the treadmill if they wanted to lose weight, or instead of having the goal of losing weight, you get on the treadmill and even just stand there. That's all you got to do. You don't have to run for 15 minutes, whatever. Just stand there. And then you'll find once you make that first step, like you said with the Stripe payments or whatever it may be, you make that first step and then the cascade effect kicks in. You're like, well, I'm already here. I might as well go in and do a minute of it. And then you want to start small and build it up. So that way you associate positive emotions with it, as opposed to this is where I struggled a lot, where I was like, okay, so if I'm going to do push-ups every time I'm waiting for my oatmeal to boil, for example, if I was like, okay, so I'm just going to bang them out. I'm going to see how many I can do. And I don't want to start small and build them up. I'm going to start at 50 at a time and that's it. And just going to stay at 50. But then I'm associating negative emotions with it because there's not that buildup phase of it. And it's a pain in the ass and it sucks. And it's like overexerting myself, as opposed to having maybe two or three. And it sounds so stupid, right? Starting so small like that. But you have that effect, that inertia starts to build. And you can use that same principle, the same framework in any area of your life that you want to change things. And you're using it in a way that you can make more money with it. I love that you check Stripe and it puts you into a state of income. And so you've got that anchor that's built in that then kicks off the productive day
Yeah. You
because
also have to think too that their willpower is difficult to have when you have a lot going on, right? And I deal with moms, so moms have kids that get sick, like my daughter's homesick today. Or you have parents that are aging, or you have, there's a million things that could happen. So willpower can be hard. When you create these anchors, you start to feel disappointed in yourself when you don't do it, right? Because it's so easy. It's just the one little thing. Like all I have to do is just check this one little thing. All I have to do is for that 1 minute, just do push-ups that 1 minute, like whatever I'm feeling, even if it's one push-up for that day, because it's been a really hard day. You'll find that after a little while, you have that one. Like I have a friend who takes a cold shower and he had one day where he, like a bunch of things happened and he forgot to take it. And oh my gosh, he almost fell into like a fit of depression that he was so disappointed in himself that he had gone like 2 years without missing a day. And it had started a cold shower, like every morning for 2 minutes. It started his day. And he started to, yeah, started to feel like it was something he needed to do. And he would take actions in his life that made him really successful because, and he believed that there's those anchors, we start to believe those anchors have a lot of power. And when we give those anchors a lot of power, there's a lot of really cool stuff that can happen because it's really easy to do that one tiny little thing. And then if we don't do it, we feel disappointed in ourselves, which makes us have immense amount of willpower to do that tiny little thing versus an immense amount of willpower to do an immense amount of thing, right? That's really hard. And that's easy to go, I know, but I got a lot going on. So who could do this big, huge thing? But if you were like, all I had to do was do 1 minute of push-ups while my oatmeal was cooking, like I'm kind of a jerk face if I
Yeah, no kidding,
can't
right? Like,
find if I
hypothetically,
can't
you
find the
can't do
willpower
five?
to
Like,
do
come on.
that. Yeah, how am I supposed to build this empire that I want to build? So yeah, I think there's a lot there. And something you mentioned is, none of us really ultimately come up with something unique in terms of the ingredients, right? Like in the Art of War, I'll say there's a finite number of colors, there's a finite number of ingredients to cook with or paint with, and yet we are able to make an infinite number of unique art and unique meals. Like that idea is I have people all the time, they're like, but I'm not saying anything unique. I'm like, yeah, but when you say it the way you say it, or you come up with a different way of talking about it, or you come up with a different way of putting it together, a different recipe, or a different way of looking, or you're just targeting a particular kind of person that deals with that in a particular kind of way, like that is still your own recipe, right? So it's like I've had friends that go, yeah, I say something, but someone's already said that in a book somewhere. And I'm like, well, good, they've just validated that that's a thing. And now you can put your spin on it. What's funny is I used to not read a lot of those books, and my partner now, he reads avidly, and he'd be like, oh, just like you, like, oh yeah, Dan Sullivan said that in a book. And I'm like, sweet, I did not read that book. So that means we both came to the same conclusion in this universe, which means the world is actually showing us things that if we just open our eyes to see it, you can see how humans work, how business works, how life works. And if we're all coming to those same conclusions, then that means it's timeless. And how freaking cool is it to come up with things that don't just work today, but they'll work 10 years from now, they're working 1,000 years from now, no matter what the economy is, no matter what businesses, no matter where AI is or any of those things, we can come up with things that if you do them now, they will be tried and true to making you successful 10, 20, 30, 50 years from now. And that's a pretty exciting, that's a pretty exciting idea.
Timeless. I love that. Yeah. So one of the things you said that stuck with me is you have to play almost a therapist with some of your clients. Yeah. I'm wondering, because I mean, I deal with the same thing, right? It's like, oh God, you know, what are some of the problems that you have them, that you notice that a lot of them face? And then how do you sort of navigate around them as the playing therapist, quote unquote? How do you, what's the dynamic like?
Yeah, well, there's two things. So number one is most often you'll find people put things off. I mean, that's the biggest indicator. They don't get the YouTube channel up. They don't start the, you know, create the content. They don't get that website up. If you know how many people that have built a course and then they don't ever sell it, right? It's just astronomical. Yeah. They say they're going to go, they complain about not having clients, but then they don't really do any of the things consistently to go out and get the clients. They're not willing to put themselves out there. I use dating analogies all the time because it's very similar to dating, to putting yourself out there. There's a big fear of rejection. There's a big fear of not being enough. There's a big fear of someone saying no. We have been brought up in a culture where people aren't said no to a lot. Even kids nowadays, kids just aren't said no to a lot. Like, we've got to toughen up your skin. When I do MMA now, and when I go into, you know, go in and practice, I have a different coach now, but my coach at the time, she would come up to me and she would come up and she would literally, I'd push me against the wall and punch me, like where I'd come up, you know, and she'd punch me because she's like, if you don't know what this feels like, if you can't normalize what this feels like, then you're going to avoid it. And you're going to make really stupid mistakes avoiding this punch. She's like, when you just can take a punch, all of a sudden you're not worried about the punch, you're thinking about the next move. And that's the key when you're talking about the therapy, is that you've got, you know, is helping them see past the fear and the pain of the punch, of the slap in the face, so that they can look to the action that needs to be taken. And the fear is often, you know, it's oh gosh, what's her name? Gilbert, something Gilbert. And she wrote Big Magic. And she said that fear is always going to be with you. And when you're on a road trip, though, it sits in the back seat and it doesn't get to control the map or the music. And I always loved the way she said that, because it's like, yeah, it's always going to be there, but it doesn't get to decide where you go or what you listen to when you're there. And that's a good way to think about it. And so from the therapy perspective, it's helping them see that the fear isn't useful. And it's not even, it doesn't even matter if it's true. It doesn't even matter. Of course, you're going to get a no. Sales and marketing is a numbers game. Right. But if you need to go out there 50 times in order to get the right number of yeses, but you're only willing to go out there one or two times before you quit, you're never going to hit the numbers. It's all a numbers game. And so doing that, the second part of that is that you cannot have somebody open up. You cannot have somebody let go of that fear. You cannot have somebody even be honest to recognize that it is there unless there is trust. And so your number one job when you're working with somebody in sales and marketing and everything is so that it's to create a sense of trust so that they can open up to you. Right. Cause if all, like, the people that come to me and they're like, I just go fast. Don't even explain, just tell me what to do and I'm going to do it. And then 6 months later, they're like, I must be the worst client, cause I cannot seem to get myself to do that. Right. And sometimes it takes them that long to finally go, okay, well, now you might be ready to open up to the reasons why you're not doing that, because you had such a wall up to say, I'm smart. I'm capable. I should be able to do this. I should be able to do this on my own. I should be able to do this without anybody helping me. I should be able to be just as good as my competitors. And you're like, none of that really matters if there's some reason why you're scared to be seen. Some reason why you don't feel like you can deal with a no.
Not good enough. You know, there's all of these complexes 100%. That can be, and most of them stem from childhood too. And so do you actually do this? Right. I mean, fair enough. Do you go back and analyze where they came from, or do you just help them to start to notice them so that they can start to acknowledge them and be able to work through them on their own? I mean, I feel like that's a common thing, dealing with these complexes and fear, being able to separate yourself, realizing that it's there, but it's not controlling the map or playing the music. You can put it in the back seat if you want.
Yeah.
Right. So
it really depends. I mean, I don't go back into childhood stuff because I just don't think I'm qualified helpful in that area.
Yeah.
And so I have colleagues that I will recommend recommend, be like, you need to talk to Deb. Like, you, if we're going to go back and you need to do some reparenting, if we need to go to like back to like childhood trauma and stuff, you need to go to Deb. Okay. You need this, you need so-and-so, you need so-and-so. So I do think I will absolutely say like, go get, I've even gifted certain sessions with certain people to clients to be like, go have a session with Cedric. Like, you need to get this out of you, whatever this is. My approach is much more like a therapist would be, which this is the hard part about coaching, right? I like talking. I have answers to everything. you want to know how to do something? I probably can tell you how I think you should do it. The hardest part of that I have had to and go through certifications and coach a crap ton of people over the last 10 years is to listen, is to ask the questions, is to create silence. Like, the best thing you can do is therapy is to not talk. Which is a hilarious notion for a coach, because like, ultimately I'm more of a consultant than a coach. Like, I have an answer. I'm not trying to get the answer out of you. Stop marketing that way. It's not going to work. Let me show you the right way to do it. Right. But from a coaching perspective, going, okay, so why do you think, just even the simple questions, why do you think you've put off putting that YouTube video up? Did you know even like 3 seconds of silence really makes people uncomfortable?
Oh, just, yeah, damn right. Well, we feel this, we're like embedded, we're kind of grown to feel this need to feel silence at all cost, right? And so there is a fear of that silence there. But when it comes down to it, it's like you've got to be able to separate yourself from the emotions that you're feeling so you can observe them, right? And I guess, yeah, you don't go back to the childhood traumas because it's we're not qualified for that. I like to, by the way, I like to just explore where it came from and then analyze the beliefs that were developed and then try to disentangle them, or at least do my best to collapse them so I can reveal the truth behind what they've been believing. Is just help them see the other side of it. And if they can do that, then serious changes can be made down the road. I love doing stuff like that. And maybe I'm not qualified for it, but I don't give a damn. I help people and have fun with it. And they appreciate it, because then nobody really is listened to like that. It's difficult to find somebody to listen to you. And I feel like that's a big part that you play, is helping them learn to listen to themselves and have that silence internally. Would you agree with that? Is that
something? Yeah, definitely. Well, and my area is in the messaging and positioning.
Yes,
so
yes.
I do more of a verbal journaling, right? So as opposed to like going, and so things from childhood can come up, but I just don't, that's not the area that I generally go. Our nurture to convert marketing is based around one of the elements is opinions, right? So we have to map out industry opinions about what is broken and what is wrong with the culture or the setup or something of whatever space you're in right now, because you're in business to try and fix something, right? You're either plugging into a model you believe in, like a system you believe in, or you're trying to create something new because you don't like the way things are. And so we've got to map out what those things are. If you are not willing to fight for them, then you will not succeed. The first time someone says something mean to you, the first time someone says, I don't believe in it, because ultimately you can't be inclusive with marketing. You have to be exclusive. Like, you have to have somebody that says, I don't like it, I think that's stupid. And you have to have someone say, oh my God, this is my world. Where have you been my whole life? Has to be that way. So if you don't care enough about your opinions, about a shared vision of the future you're trying to create for them, whether that's in their life, their relationships, their business, their health, whatever, then you will not be able to withstand the hits that you take from the people that don't like what you're saying. If you believe in it enough. So when I am talking to people, I am pushing how much they care. And there's been tons of times where they're like, I have this opinion. And when it really comes to it, it's like, how much do you really care about that opinion? How much are you really deeply like draw a line in the sand with that opinion, have a belief, so a faith so much in that idea of what's broken or the way things should be, that if you don't have that, that's where a lot of the revealing happens, in terms of, because then a lot of times they'll be like, well, yeah, something happened when I was a kid or when I was a teen, or my mom or my dad or something like that, that'll come up to say maybe why they thought they cared about that, but now they realize they don't really care about that as much, right? Yeah. Or they're so fiery about it. So sometimes I'm the devil's advocate that just says, okay, well, what if I said this? What if I told you that I don't like what you said because of this? How would you react? And some of that is conditioning so that when they get an interview, when they go online, they have a rebuttal because objection handling is really important. But also because you start to see if you understand what you're willing to fight for, you understand what you believe, what your values are, who you are. And you can't do that on the surface. A lot of times that has to be lived through experience. Like I used to do focus groups way back in the day in corporate, and we'd go in and they'd go, "Yeah, we want to ask everybody what their values are." It's like nobody knows how to verbalize what their values are. But we'd go in and we'd ask, we'd say, we'd do scenarios. Okay. It just snowed. Your neighbor across the street is pregnant woman, and she, do you go over and plow her? I lived in Columbus, Ohio at the time. Like, do you go and get her driveway all clean? Right there. Okay. Now it's a 22-year-old guy, right? Do you go into, and we go down these interesting scenarios, and it's a really interesting discussion of where their values are. Is the value, no, I'm a capable human being, so I'm gonna do the whole neighborhood. It's like, oh no, only if it's somebody who's weaker than me, then I'm going to help them in that area. And you do different scenarios to really understand what are your values.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the podcast, and I want to let you know that I've got a free book that you can get if you want to tap into more of these resources. And you can get that for free at kylesbook.com. Back to the podcast.
Like, what are your values? Are your values contribution? Right? Are your values compassion? Are your values, like, what are those things? And people don't know those on the surface. Same thing for your business. Like the things you're really willing to fight for, there are people that their real true essence is in growing, scaling, selling businesses. They have a way of, I have some friends that they're just, the way of thinking is different. We have some people where they are true coaches. Like if they are not impacting a human being on a singular level, like they do not find meaning in life. Those people have a hard time scaling a business. They need to have a partner who's the C CEO to scale a business. So when you start to really unravel this, so I do more of the storytelling, like the verbal journaling, the really understanding what are the ideas they're willing to fight for and push that envelope for them. And that oftentimes unlocks a lot of things to understand either they just don't care as much as they thought they did, or to unravel the thing they really truly cared about, so we can nestle that into their messaging.
Exactly. See, that's the best part, is nestling it into the branding. So that way other people who have a similar characteristic or a similar psychological map of the world, they would latch on to that brand, being like, okay, so this person fits me. I like this, because what they're saying, and you will make enemies like that. And I feel like that's important to acknowledge, because you can prepare for that right off the bat. But that's the point of it. You're gonna make some enemies, but there are gonna be some people who love you because of your commitment to your values. And you can structure your branding around that. It comes down to finding a hole in the marketplace and being able to fill it with something that nobody else is doing, in a way that your values are being fully, I guess, fleshed out, fully lived into. So that way, you're kind of c contrasting a lot of the things. It goes back to the black and white. You can lean into the way, like, for example, if you find something as a back to the child thing, if you had trauma and you made a meaning of it, it will help to flip the meaning, see the other side of it. Maybe that happened for this reason. Maybe it was a didn't even actually happen. Maybe you're making up the memory based on future things that happened afterwards. Just the same way that you flip that and see the other side of the coin, you can do that with marketing, and say, even for an objection or for something bad that's perceived as bad in your company, maybe you lean into that. An example that comes to mind is the old Volkswagen advertising. They would say, and this is so cool, they would say, "Think small." So they were getting hassled because their cars were so small, and so they leaned into it. Instead of trying to say, "Oh, they're not that small," they said, "Yeah, think small." They leaned right into it and turned the negative into a positive. And that's what I'm talking about in terms of being able to brand in a way that's memorable and unique to you. What do you think about that when it comes to helping your clients get their values in the messaging in their marketing? How do they go about
I mean,
embodying that?
the really also, by the way, we have moved into an era of personal brand. Right. So yes, you could have companies that don't, where you don't know who runs it and you don't know what they care about, But that's not very often. We want to know who's running things. We want to know what they care about. We want to know what their beliefs are. We want to, we care. We have to, everybody wants to know, right? And getting interviewed and getting like being out there, having your own social following. Like we want to know, we want to know. And we will boycott. We will, you know, we will fight for, we will, whatever it is, depending on what we believe is the values and the care of that person and how much we connect to them. So a lot of what I love behavioral psychology. We, you know, when we create online communities or a perception of community, there is a sense of belonging, and belonging means that we have to have some shared thing. It could be shared habits. It could be, you know, you see, it's very popular to see all the stuff of like the mom accounts where they're joking about, you know, how hard it is to be a mom or relationships or kids or things like that. And the inside joke, like part of belonging is inside jokes. Moms get the joke. I understand it. So you got inside jokes. You have things that you all can ban around that you don't like. You can ban around things that you love. You can ban around things you wish you had. Like we call them truisms. Like you can have playful and serious truisms. Yeah. Mm. And that's what works a lot on social media right now, are this duality of showing how hard life is and the inside jokes and the things like that. So that can all work. You have to decide what that is for you. You have to decide what kind of humor you have. You have to decide what you're going to poke at and what you're going to give space and grace for, right? You're going to have to decide where, how much compassion there is versus how much. So we call it emotional niching. Like instead of going after demographic niching, being like, I'm going to go after, a first mom, I'm going to go after millennials. I'm going to go after this kind of thing that's in this age group. And her name is Mary and she's got 3.5 kids and, you know, and all those kind of things. Instead, because my point is most people that are starting businesses, they don't know that information. So what you do is it's like asking someone on a first date to marry you and now you're stuck, right? It's very hard to change all of your marketing, all of your messaging, all your website, all your brand when you've picked the wrong person to target. And half the time, by the way, we do what's called an ideal client scale. You're picking the person in survival mode because they need you the most. So you feel needed, but they are the least likely person to pay you because they're in the hierarchy of needs. They're in survival mode, which means they're worried about their survival, not about the next level. And you're usually selling the next level. Like unless you're selling an actual product or a service where you're saving them time or saving them money or making them money. Other than that, everybody else, you are a luxury to them. So we have to market. So the emotional niching side is where we look at how are they feeling, right? Like, what are the pains that they're feeling? What are the ways that they feel ashamed or guilty? What are the things that they wish they could say out loud, but they can't? Because if you say them out loud, they're going to be like, oh my God, thank God you said that out loud. Because so you've got to figure out what that emotional niching side is.
And what you're doing is you're entering the conversation that's going on in their mind already, which is so powerful, right? Because that's what you want to do with marketing is find the psychographic. That's what we're talking about here, the psychographics instead of the demographics. So find the beliefs, the emotions that you share with the individuals and be able to tap into that. And also tactically speaking, it opens up, for example, joint venture opportunities with the mom groups, for example. They've got access to your target audience and you identify that because they have similar psychographics in their targeting that you do. And then that opens the opportunity to partner with them and offer a synergistic relationship because you've been able to identify the psychographics that you both share. Like that's super powerful. I love stuff like that. Do you get into that aspect of the marketing?
It leaves to more flexibility. Like the big thing that I help with is that you're constantly going to be leveling up your content, leveling up the words you use, the way you use them, how you talk. And there's so much tweaking and morphing that you have to be able to be agile with that, right? And so with the psychographics, emotional niching, those, I like to find names for my stuff that's like, you know, that's my own version of names.
I like it,
ultimately, and then our own systems of how you map out what those are. But from the emotional niching or psychographic side, you are agile because you're just tweaking the way they're feeling, or you're leaning, what you see something that's working, you lean more into it and you play around with it. What that does is I think like from a, of course, I think collaborations, I think relationships, I think all those, it's all helpful in your business. You do not like being on an island is unhelpful in anything. You have to be visible. You have to have clout. You have to have all of these things. So collaborations, friendships, connections, all of that is really important. When you are really clear about the emotional niching side, really clear about who you're targeting, really clear about who you are and what parts of yourself you want to be boisterous and loud about. I call it ranty, when you want to be ranty about, you're like a magnet to the people that want to connect with you. Like all of a sudden, you're not pitching, you're being pitched. Like all of a sudden, people are asking you to come into the group. All of a sudden, people are like, hey, come to the invite you to this party. Like come out and fly out and do this thing. Like do this stuff. Like because what they want is they want to be in your world. And the only caveat I tell people, because depending on what industry you're in, is when you have there's a problem you solve. There's three ways people deal with it. They deal with it publicly, privately, or subconsciously. And you have to be careful that you are not publicly talking about a topic that they're only private about.
Or
Because,
unconscious about totally, right?
well, and if they're unconscious, stop marketing to that person. Because then you have an additional effort of trying to
Yes.
then make them see that it's a problem in the first place. So stop trying to save a marriage
No.
when they're two people that hate each other and have no intention of ever seeing that they're part of the problem. Like those are
Ha,
terrible people to
true.
target,
Yeah.
right? It's an easy example for people to like, oh, I get it. So that there's like understanding where they're at, because I've had people where they'll be targeting people with diabetes or targeting people with, that are in massive debt or things like that. And you have to be careful. They're going, I don't know why I'm not growing when I'm talking about these things. And you're like, well, you have to talk about like YouTube and places are good places to do those because they don't have to be visible to show that they like it. Like you can get views without, so you're not going to get a ton of shares if they don't want to talk about it. You're not going to build an online community if they don't want that showing up in their profile that they're part of that space. I've had women that are certain kinds of coaches and their agreements and what comes over when somebody pays them says something different so that in their home it doesn't look, and on their bills and on the things, it doesn't look like they've just purchased this particular kind of therapy or care because they're private about those things. So how you market, where you market, and what you put on what platform and how is it, like I see everybody, they're like, just put everything everywhere. And I'm like, that is not actually a smart thing to do. If you really understand your audience and you understand what they're public and private about, then you can start actually being really connected and nurturing to what you email, which can be private, versus what you do on social, which is meant to be shared and is meant to be public. And so those things are, it's a really interesting way to like to take it one step deeper. And when you understand your audience really well, it's in the emotional niching, it's really easy to know what they'd be private about, because those are the things they're still ashamed about. Those are the things they're still uneasy about being public about. They don't really want to talk about with their, coworkers, but they talk about it with a really close friend. Like those are things that we can figure out. And it's funny because you'd think it wouldn't make much of a difference, but every platform has its ways that you grow, and understanding how the platforms work and then understanding how your audience takes the information and the concepts that you're putting out there helps you pick the right places to be in order to grow the best way.
Right. So that brings up the question, how do you know what to share with them? How do you know what to make like to get that message across to them in a way that they're going to be enamored and want to share it? And I love the differentiation you made between something that they're okay with sharing publicly and something more private, whereas you can have a one-on-one conversation through email, but not through social because it won't get shared. The question becomes then, how do you know what to share? So that way you have that connection, that bonding that's happening with your audience. How do you know what to brand yourself as?
So when we talk about, I was telling you like the opinions that people have, we do a movement manifesto to talk about like what you want the shared vision of the future, what you want the world to look like.
Yes.
We map those out. Those are a lot of what gets shared, because it's a exciting idea of what the world could be, or it's you being bold enough to stand up and say what the world isn't. Right. And those things are often the things that get shared a lot. Right. The things that get saved are often things that are the hacks. So we tell people, like, first off, stop thinking that your job is to train everybody. You're not, stop thinking you're a teacher. There's nothing exciting about being a teacher. Most people don't actually want to learn on a regular basis. They want to relax. They want to enjoy life. Of course, as entrepreneurs, we're all go-getters. But you're not learning 100% of the time, right? You're choosing when you do that. When you're getting on social media, you're not going, I really want to learn something deep and difficult right now, because
Yeah, no kidding. It's
that
the
sounds
opposite. It's like I'm trying to
great.
let go. I'm trying to relax a little bit here. Yes,
Yes.
right?
Now, if they're joining you to a webinar, if they're joining you to a thing, and even then, your job is what I call to fill a gap. Your job is to change the way they think. Most people think you're trying to tell them what to do. That is not how you win people over. You win people over by changing the way they think. The most powerful stuff is to say, this is what you thought the world was, but this is the truth, and this is why. right? That this is how you thought things worked, but this is the reason why. And one of the common things you'll do in messaging, and it works in writing and scripts and movies, is called the common enemy. So who, because if you don't want them to be the problem, it doesn't help for you to go, hey, you need to lose weight. You're the problem. Nobody wants to hear that, right? To where they go, hey, you've been trying to lose weight, but everything on the shelf has sugar in it. There, nobody's required to tell you what's in anything that you have, right? Everything's got preservatives, everything, all these things. Of course you haven't lost weight because you have been sabotaged from the FDA, from the thing, from whatever it is, since the beginning, from sugar, from caffeine, from alcohol, whatever, from since the beginning. I have figured out this other way though. So when then they go, okay, so everything I've tried before didn't work because this thing was the problem. It's not me, it's that thing, but you know about that thing and you have something that's different than that thing. So now I'm going to listen to you, right? So webinars and things like that is all about changing the way they see the world. When you're online, all the things, like I was saying, you're saying, what are our inside jokes? Right? What are the things we all laugh about? Well, even I've had colleagues where we've made a board of the gifts they would use. What are the shows they would watch? What are the things they think are funny? You know, like, do they have a crass sense of humor? Do they have a dry sense of humor? Do they have a, you know, slapstick sense of humor? What are those things? Because even those can work online. So like, what do they, like, we go drill down to go, what is it they're actually going to resonate with? But it's the inside jokes. It's the calling out how the world is broken. It's the saying the things out loud that we talk about. And so they're things that they are willing to say, to share, because they like the way it is a joke. Oftentimes that's why they're jokes, right? Because they can go, oh yeah, women are always cleaning and always doing these things. Like, I'd really like to change that. I'd really like more equal, you know, equal distribution of chores. But they don't share the thing that's like, men suck and we're going to do equal distribution of chores. They share the thing where it's like, hey, me, when I'm home doing things, my husband, when he's home doing things, and they're two, then they've playfully show the problem. Yes. And so what gets shared is a playfulness, not an accusatory, right? So when you go and you shame people, you say things that are abrupt, people aren't going to share that. When you say things that are playful, but hit on the exact same problem, you do that. Have you noticed, like, every sitcom ever, right? They're all talking about really serious stuff. Like, they all deal with really serious breakups and cheating and, you know, death and things and all that kind of stuff, but they do it in a way that you're still laughing. That's why we use all of those memes and those GIFs and those things like that, because those are the things that people are willing to share. They're willing to share deep things if they are lighthearted. Now, there's absolutely caveats to that, as with everything. I have a friend who is, you know, talks about co-parenting and divorce, and she'll have real serious truisms that speak to, like, you know, like don't stay together for the kids, you know, like that idea, that concept, right? The thing is though, is she doesn't get much love from the people who aren't divorced yet. She gets love from the people who are already divorced and then have to hear people say that you've screwed your kids up because you got a divorce. And they want so desperately to believe that. I remember when she started doing this stuff, I was like, oh, thank God you're saying that out loud, because I've been divorced for 7 years and I think my kids are better. But I've had people tell me I've literally emotionally traumatized my children by getting divorced. I was like, I traumatized them more if I would have stayed married.
Yeah, no kidding.
I want to find people who believe in the things I believe in. So there are the serious things, the bold things, but you're going to get hate from the people who haven't made that decision yet. They're still too far away.
That's
they're
the other
still
side of the coin.
Unconscious.
Yeah. And you're not selling them, right? That's you're not, they're not your target audience. The question becomes,
well, you gotta
how do you
know
what to lean in yet? I mean, maybe yet, but how do you know what to lean into though? Because it's like so difficult to tap into. Right, to testing, yes, and talking to the target audience, yes, and having these launching 20 campaigns and seeing which one sticks with multiple touch points. When you go about testing, how do you know what to test with? How do you know what to start out with? Like, let's say for a specific market, let's say you're a consultant that helps people sell on Amazon or something. How do you know what goes about what to lean into when it comes to really, first of all, putting the people who are unconscious and are not going to be, they're not going to want to buy the product anyways, putting those aside, while at the same time, the other side really attract, it is a magnet. The magnet analogy is perfect because you're repelling, you're pushing away and you're taking in at the same time. And so how do you know what to really test when it comes to finding out what's going to resonate?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why people hire me, or someone like me, because I have a client, her name is Kathleen Cobell, and she sells on Amazon, but I've known her for years. She actually just came back in, to our group program because she does the retail arbitrage where you sell things on Amazon, white label things. And now she's teaching courses that are killing it where you, do reviews as an influencer and make money off of reviewing products on Amazon. And you end up working with somebody like me who maps that stuff out, right? You sit down for someone who knows how to, like a therapist would, only I do it for marketing and messaging, right? Which is ask the right questions and really map out what you care about and what you want. Because in that instance, if you're talking about Amazon, what it does is there are people who just have no problem being seen, have no problem doing any of those things. And they have a massive amount of time and they just create content and they don't have a coach. They just do it. Like they're just successful because it's brute force Gary V style. I'm just going to create an insane amount of content, see what sticks, and then do more of the things that stick. More often than not, someone will come to me like, I don't have that time and I don't want to put forth the effort of creation. I want to map out first. So we'll map things out. But ultimately, we're deciding what are those things, what's the categories of things. Like if she goes, okay, a lot of times people come to me because they're like, I'm targeting moms, I'm targeting women, I'm targeting things, nurturing, right? I want to nurture people. So a lot of times I'll get people in the medical, nutrition, fitness and wellness. We'll get people in the life coaching. We'll get people in the like crafts, like physical product stuff or anything that you could sell to mom. Amazon, you could sell things doing the Amazon stuff to mom because it can be a side job. Right. Yeah. And so what is it that like her targeting ends up being playing a lot with multiple concepts? She ends up playing with the idea that you're already buying everything off Amazon. Why not make money? Like, why not make money from the things you buy? Right. You have opinions about the things that you like and don't like. Like you need a place to share those opinions. Why not make money while you do it?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so we play with these ideas. We play with the idea of you have kids at home, but you also want to make side money, but you don't want to have, like, she targets people who don't necessarily, like, they've had a following, they've gotten a little bit of a following, but they don't really know what to do with it. They don't know how to monetize their following, right? And here's a way to monetize your following by telling people about things you already love. Like, it's a really low barrier to entry to tell somebody, you don't have to learn anything new. You just have to tell people how you feel about something you already bought and you can make money off of it. Like, it's an easy sell. The way we go, the emotional parts around it is the playfulness of videos about the door rings and it's all the Amazon things. And you're like, well, I'm just supporting my fellow ladies. Like, oh, I'm just got to get that. Like, easy. Yeah. Well, I've got Prime. There's no shipping. Like those things to play on the idea of how much you're already buying to go, you're already spending all this money. Why not make money doing it? Right. Mm. And all these things. So we play with those. You play with the funny stuff. You play with the serious stuff about wanting a side hustle, but not wanting to, to have a business. Right. There's a lot of emotional components there that you can speak to where it's not about having being a coach or being a thing or having this big thriving business. You just want vacation money. Like you just want this thing. Yeah. So it's this detachment. So there's a lot of areas that you can go in. And then once we've mapped out exactly who you're targeting, then we map out, okay, what are the inside jokes? What are the truisms? What are the things? What are those things? And then that's when you start playing. So instead of going and having no idea what to play with, you have a nice vault of ideas. And then you cyclically look through them. And every couple of weeks you go, what hit? What didn't? What got shared? What didn't? Yes. What did people comment on? What didn't? Okay, now we're going to do more content on this idea. And we're going to deeper and deeper and see what's working in those spaces. And then you start to get into a groove of knowing what's going to work. And then it's constantly just looking and seeing. And then once you know most what's going to work, you can start plugging in 20% of things that are new and that you can play with.
Interesting.
At some point, this thing might fatigue right? Like in ads, you get content fatigue. And so those things can happen. Yeah. I mean, it's the fact is you can go in and just shove the Gary Vee thing where you're just shoving everything out, like in all places at all times. Most people in my space that have moms that have kids and then partners and parents and all those things, they don't have that time. So they're going to do more of the mapping first to try and have a better idea of what content they're putting out there without just the shoving.
Right. Yeah, fair enough. But it's so freaking hard to get outside of the jar to see the label. It's like the way I look at it is, let's say you're looking at your business and what you're doing from inside the jar. So you've got it, you're excited about it. But to see how other people see it, to get that objective viewpoint, is so freaking difficult. And so you're saying the answer to that is just to observe what's working in the target audience, what they're already sharing, and test with associations with your product. Do as many tests as you can. But then there's also the, like you said, for example, a mom wanting to sell on Amazon, but also having unconscious counter beliefs to it, like maybe profit is bad, or all of these things that you don't think about that your target audience might have. Then how do you go about integrating these objections that handle unconscious beliefs, unconscious motivations in your marketing? For example, the belief that she might have, or her target market might have, which is profit is bad. So you've got to counter all of these unconscious beliefs while at the same time giving them something that they consciously resonate with. How do you do that? I mean, it's complex as all hell, but how do you look at that?
Well, I think the outward social content that you create centers around hope, centers around opportunity, right? Once you get them into your email list, now you can break down the deep beliefs that they have. Now you can speak to those things and connect with them more intimately on the things that would keep them from buying, right? Because generally those beliefs that you're talking about, that belief about profit, that doesn't keep them from sharing your content. That doesn't keep them about getting excited with your content. It would keep them from actually implementing and being a successful student. It might not even keep them from buying it. The amount of people that buy Amy Porterfield's content, who I love, she's an amazing person. You know, I know her personally, but only like 10% of the people who buy her stuff ever make and sell a course.
Yeah. Right. That's on the high side of things. Yeah.
The other 90%, they get in and then they have things like that, that pop up things I've been on a call where somebody was like, well, but what if this thing like blows up? And then I'm like, I'm on Oprah. And I'm like, you haven't even finished making the course. Like, you have the thing. Wow. Like, and now we're worried about Oprah. I'm like, what would happen? And she's like, well, how would that affect my marriage? And like, what would we do? Wow, and like, what if I made more money than my husband? Like, how would he feel about that? And I'm like, these are great questions that you're obviously concerned about. We should have a talk about those.
Right. So how do you go about, and we'll wrap this up, I'm just curious how you go about unraveling the unconscious barriers that could be preventing them A, from buying, but B, from implementing when they do buy. Because it's difficult. Like you said, it's not on the surface. So how do you go about making sure that you're handling those unconscious barriers?
Well, I think, I mean, when you're working with a client, you're mapping these things out. Like, we have a thing, it's called nurture messaging, results messaging, and conversion messaging, right? So you've got nurture messaging is about understanding the things that get shared out on social media, the beliefs, the hope, the shared vision of the future, what's wrong with the world. Your results messaging is a framework where you understand where they're at and where they want to go, and you have clear steps on how you're going to do it that fits with your exact person, and how do we talk about that? I need to be able to see a visual that you can talk about in like 90 seconds. And then conversion messaging is some of what you're talking about, which is there are little sales strategies. There are little things that you can do that we call them like pouring lemon on the paper cut. We call them like understanding your catalyst, right? Like, most people will go, we need to do counseling for our marriage. Oh yeah, I need to lose weight. Or like, oh yeah, I need to, you know, make more, start being serious about actually making money in my business, or, you know, something like that. But usually it's a catalyst that gets them to go online and view the content or actually buy from you. That catalyst is, my favorite pair of jeans don't fit, right? Like, my kid just said something to me that made me realize, like, I think a certain way and I don't like it. You know, like, my husband just asked, is sleeping on the couch for a month, right? Like, my business, I've just got my taxes back and I spent more money than I made last year. Those catalysts. So when you know your catalysts, we know how to pour lemon on the paper cut. We got all these little tiny little strategies so that in your content, you're poking them and you're poking them in just the right way to get them to be like, oh crap, now is the time. Because that's ultimately what we have to do. A lot of times we say they've normalized the pain. I've normalized being achy. I'm over 40. Like, I've normalized gaining weight because, you know, it's, you got to eat. Like, I've normalized sleeping on the couch because we have small kids and that's what you do. Like, I've, nobody makes money in their business in the first 5 years statistically, you know, like whatever those are.
Yeah.
The whatever it is, we've normalized that pain societally. And so you are, your, the conversion messaging is around taking all the things we know, you get them into your world. And then once you've gotten into the world, you poke them. You poke them with just these little tiny things that get them to see, like, oh, I see that catalyst. Like, oh, I see. There's a funny, I used to like Dane Cook way back in the day. And he had this funny one about how women are like these ninjas, like men fight like regular, but women are these ninjas.
True.
And
yep.
Yeah. And he's like, I get in this fight with my girlfriend and she just says, you're stupid like your father. And he's like, whatever. And he goes downstairs and he's like, three hours later, I open the, you know, the door from downstairs and I go, my was a brilliant man. And the idea is that those hours of just that, like, you just nestle in their brain and they wake up at 2 a.m. and they go, oh my God, if I don't do this, I'm going to lose my marriage. If I don't do this, I'm just going to keep being unhealthy and uncomfortable. Like, I'm never going to see my kids graduate. Like, if I don't do this, my kids are going to end up just like me. And I don't know that I want that. Like, if I don't do this, I'm going to have to go to Christmas dinner and justify why I have a business when it hasn't made any money. I'm going to have to go get a job. Like, oh my God, I better act now. So the conversion messaging is the ninja stuff in there that you nestle in that are the little tiny words, the way you phrase something that people don't think much of, but it sticks with them. And then 2 or 3 days, and you do that constantly. So you're top of mind. And now when the catalyst happens and they're ready to take action, they're like, okay, I need Kyle, obviously. Obviously.
I love it, man. That, what you just said right there would make a sweet social media clip, by the way. You just like, it was bomb, bomb, bomb. Like, so much value right there. So I'll send you this after. You guys can clip it however you want. That was freaking sweet. I love that answer.
Thanks.
Yeah, seriously. One last question. What's a question that I should be asking, but I'm not asking, that if I were to ask, would probably be able to produce the greatest amount of results for the people watching, for the entrepreneurs watching? What's a good question that I should be asking?
Oh gosh, so many questions. Wow, I rarely get put on the spot on something that I would say. I normally have an answer for everything.
You challenged me at the beginning. I was like, all right, let's see if we can do it.
I know. Yeah, my favorite question. So I will say this. I was posed a question. We'll do this. A girl that I'm in a mastermind with, she believes in what's called a visionary KPI, which I absolutely love. And she helps basically train and place like CMOs for companies. And she's a visionary KPI, which means she said there is an absolute correlation between you as the person running the company, being the head of it, whatever, whether you're a solopreneur or not, that you are pushing forward the vision of the company, of what it is, whatever it is you're trying to build, whether you're building something on, you know, selling something on Amazon or not, you're pushing forward that vision, right? And so to asking that question, right, of how are you pushing forward the vision of your business relentlessly? Like, that is a really great question, is what I've started asking myself from her, because going, okay, how am I pushing the vision of my business forward? Which then posed the question, what is the vision for this business? And you may find we've just tweaked just that one question, just the Dana. If we were looking at the visionary KPI, like, how are you pushing forward the vision of your business right now, relentlessly, and adding relentlessly, not just pushing, but like relentlessly living the vision of what you're trying to do. And then I started asking myself, what is the vision? And we've made a ton of changes over the last 6 months. Like, to upping just the colors of our brand have shifted to a little bit more elevated, elegant, to like deciding to rewrite the Boss Mom book. Well, we're coming out, like, we're moving our community. We haven't announced this yet, but we're going to be moving our community off Facebook and into a Circle community and doing a whole, like, there's a whole bunch of stuff we're going to do from that one question. Because if I thought about, if I'm going to get on and I'm going to talk about what I care about, I've been talking about things that I care about for 10 years, but I have to roll it all up and say, what is the vision that I'm pushing forward?
Right.
What do I want to be known for? What does that look like? Then you start to, you know, and you may end up needing to get a life coach or a therapist to if you don't know the answer to that question, because it's in there. What you want to build, who you want to be known for, what legacy you want to leave is in there. And you may find, like, it unlocks some really awesome bits of creativity and things you're willing to burn to the ground and rebuild, because just because something works does not mean you should keep doing it.
I love that. Tying it all together, being able to have that cohesive vision and then sharing that in a way that gets other people onboarded to the vision. Dana, it's been awesome. And I think we explored a lot of interesting psychological principles and marketing tactics that go in along with them. So thank you so much for being here. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode. And if you want to get a free copy of my book, go to kylesbook.com and you can get a copy there. I'll talk with you soon.